I am Doug Friedman.
And I am Meredith Levy.
And this
is your
mental breakdown.
Breakdown. Never gets old.
Licensed psychotherapists and fairly decent acquaintances. Although I'm going to bust you right off the bat. I know I'm going to bust you because I am busted as well.
We didn't do the computer thing.
Exactly.
Nope. I thought about it today and I was like, fuck.
I know. I did the same thing. Like, oh, we're recording. Ooh, what are we going to talk about? Oh, the laptop challenge. Oh man. I did not even once. Like we nope. talked about it and it was fresh and I still didn't do it.
That night I consciously didn't do it. Actually,
really?
I thought about doing it because I ran group that night. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to shut down. And then I was like, oh, fuck. I have all these things I need up though. Like, I don't want to forget about them. And then I was like, I'll do it tomorrow. I thought, okay, you know what? If I do it like multiple days, it's just not every day. That'll be good. Nope.
Right.
Then I forgot about it. So, God damn it, we're going to try again.
It's so hard. Especially, I mean, laptops, you just close them. And that was my whole point in this thing is right. Everything is still right there, right below the surface. Like,
yeah. If I put a sticky on my computer, I'll do it. TBD if I put the sticky.
Well, right. But you mean an actual sticky, not like the sticky app.
No. Like a real sticky note.
Right. I tried the sticky app on the computer for a while and had like all these different things. It doesn't work for me. I find it much more satisfying to have a handwritten to-do list so you can actually scratch stuff off.
Totally. I love to-do lists so much that sometimes if I forgot to put something on my to-do list, but I did it that day, I'll write it on my to-do list after and then cross it out because I feel like I should have that pleasure of crossing it out.
Speaking of to-do lists, you recently too did a closet clean out with your niece.
That was just brilliant. The best part of it is she's 17. She sat on her bed. It was me and her boyfriend was over and Ooh. We're both very type A. And so we just held up things and she was like, yes, no, give away. That's trash. Keep, give away.
Wow.
I'm like, this must be really exhausting for you.
I'm a big fan of cleaning out the closet, but when I was younger, it was like the Acme cartoon closet where, you know,
me too.
You open the door and it all just avalanches down on you.
Completely. My mom would tell me to go clean my room and I would be like, okay. So I would literally just take everything off my floor, smash it in the closet, like hold it and like close the closet. And I was like, oh, clean.
Yeah. You ready for this? There was at least a year, maybe longer, where the floor of my room at my dad's could not be seen. It was covered mostly with clothes.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And you know, we had a washer dryer downstairs in the garage.
Right.
I never did laundry. So
what did you do?
I threw it all in the closet and I would just throw my clothes in the closet. And I don't know, what would I do eventually? Like, probably bring clothes for my mom's. I don't know.
Maybe. Oh my God, that's fucking amazing.
I'm sure I did like, oh, I'm all out of clothes. I guess I'll do a load of laundry now. How do you do it? How does it work? Okay, cool. I did it. And right. I never really got busted until my dad like opened the closet. And the closet at his place was these sliding mirror doors.
Yeah.
Right? That revealed this. And it was a pretty big closet and just full of clothing, like stacked pretty high. You know, like it wasn't like, oh, there's some clothes on the floor. It was like waist high of clothing. So he was like, son, this is not okay. And he he bought, I think, a giant trash bin and stuck it in the laundry room downstairs. And I was like, you need to keep your clothes in there. And when it's full, you need to start washing your clothes. Like, okay. So I stuffed it like so full. And I remember distinctly the most disgusting thing that I really hope changed how I did this, but I don't think it did. As I was putting these clothes into the big bin downstairs and I'm lifting everything and I'm seeing the floor of the closet, I saw plural roaches.
Oh.
Cockroaches were in my room, like living in my old clothing. And I'm pretty sure my response was stuff them in the trash bin downstairs and never wear that stuff again. Like, don't go in there anymore.
Oh my God.
Horrible. Roaches are one of the few things that really make me high step out of the way. Like they give me the heebie-jeebies.
Yep.
Not a fan.
I concur.
Speaking of heebie-jeebies, you were very excited to hear some potential governmental news where something's getting, there you go. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. June 1st, right? The government has to reveal to the public everything about UFOs. Because that is one thing I do want to know. So
interesting.
I don't know what they call them now, not UFOs. But so anyway, it can be any essentially unidentified flying object. So that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to present all this shit on aliens, right? Like it can be, I'm assuming it could be like, oh, that's a Russian plane, but we don't know what it is. But sure. There are definitely things that are going to come out, I hope, that are crazy. So count down to that June 1st.
But it doesn't mean we get to go tour Area 51 or anything like that, right?
I mean, I don't know. Maybe we will.
Do you remember, of course you remember, The X-Files?
Yes. For those of you who don't know what that is, look it up because you're too young.
Yeah.
Speaking of too young.
There we go. Drew is... He's no longer too young. I think what he's realizing in a lot of what we've talked about last week and this week is being an individual and being an adult and really getting there. So it's cool to hear him getting there, his progress.
It's just great. That's all I have to say. It's fantastic.
And where the session starts, we kind of cut a few things right in the very beginning, but he was telling me about moving his apartment. He's moving from his old place and he's moving to a new spot, which is actually the same spot he lived when he first got to LA. So it's almost like moving back to something that he thought he outgrew or something. Anyway, you'll hear what he says. Stick around, listen up, don't look. We will not see you later, but we will talk at you later.
in just a little bit.
That's right.
I'm hella excited. I can't wait. Like, this is going to be awesome. And it's been nice because it feels like I'm making that decision. I'm not like, oh, this is where I live. What do you think about me now?
Yeah. Well, and you're talking about something external, like where I live, versus something internal. Like, I'm psyched about it. And I'm also cool with it now in the fashion world, so to speak. We used to call it rock star attire, which means like sweats and a fucking t-shirt. And you walk into a place, and if somebody's dressed like that and their hair is a little straggly, you kind of got to assume they're a rock star because you don't know.
Right.
And a lot of it is how you carry yourself. And now it sounds like you're comfortable wearing a t-shirt and sweats because you know you're a rock star on the inside.
I'll bet.
Right?
I'll bet.
There you go. Yep.
Absolutely. I'm still stressed about finances and all that shit, but I feel very comfortable as far as my decision-making is going. I feel like I'm a lot more strong in that. It's been busy. It's been good.
Good. And things with girlfriend. How's that going? One thing I think about in the context of not just your relationship with her, but in the context of finances and money, like that's been a theme for you with some of the relationships you've had. Your budget shifting, your safety net's kind of going. In previous relationships, you were taking care of people. And part of that was the money thing. Part of that was just like being you. But I wonder how that is now, how open you are with her, how humbled you are with yourself and comfortable you are with yourself with just saying, yeah, this is where I'm at right now.
It's been a learning lesson in probably the best way possible as far as that's concerned, because I don't feel any pressure as far as like having like $7 in my bank account. Yesterday, I woke up just kind of on the wrong side of the bed. Just one of those mornings where I wasn't really feeling very good and kind of sad and not really sure why, and just kind of like going through it. And I mean, I think I snapped at her. I said something. And I'll relate this back to finances, I promise. So I was like, I'm just off today. I don't feel good. I'm sad. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on. She's like, well, do you need to cry about it? I was like, yeah, I think that's exactly what I need. So we just sat and I kind of cried for a minute and I felt a lot better. And she's like, what's got you so stressed out? And that kind of opened up the conversation of like, well, I'm looking for a job, finances, where I'm at, and this is what I'm going through. And I don't really know what's going on. I've never done it like this. And I'm scared and I don't really know what to do. And she was like, it's okay. I'm scared too. We kind of had that conversation of, it wasn't a reassurance of like, I'm not going anywhere because you're broke. It was just a reassurance of like, we got this, you know, we'll be okay. We're going to figure it out. This is part of life. And we're still young.
I think part of it is that reassurance that I'm not going anywhere because you're broke. That's actually the fear that she's going to abandon you because I'm broke. I'm not good enough. Something's wrong with me. I'm not. And that's going to pop up if we check that or just pause on that and really listen for what's my connection here like with her. It's her going, I'm here. I'll support you. I'm with you. Still you going through it for yourself.
Right.
But she's there to support that. So it doesn't feel alone, abandoned, stranded. That's different than, is she going to leave me because I can't take her out to a nice dinner? Takes a little pressure off when you're not trying to be a certain way for her and you're not thinking she's going to leave or abandon if I'm not that certain way.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really allowing me to be myself and kind of be patient with all of this. Because I am in a lot of the unknown of like, well, I'm in the middle of the pandemic. I left a decent job that I didn't really like. We've had this conversation a couple of times where it's like, I don't know what's going to happen. I'm scared. And it always works out. And so I'm kind of there right now. Right. It's like, yeah, I'm scared and I don't really know what's going to happen, but I know it's going to work out for the okay or the best, hopefully the best.
Yeah. And that's a big shift from when we first met, and things that were unknown or uncertain were super scary.
The scariest, yeah.
You're allowed to feel scared.
Yeah.
You're allowed to feel uncertain. And you're actually experiencing that you're allowed to share that instead of mask it, avoid it, get high and not feel it.
Yeah, I think this has been kind of like building over the last couple of weeks. And I think we talked about it last time. I've just been smoking a lot, like a lot. I kind of put two and two together. It was like 2 o'clock at night. I couldn't sleep. Man, like I really just wish I could smoke a bowl right now. And I just couldn't fall asleep. And it was probably 3:34 when I started getting that overwhelming feeling of like, all I could think about was work. All night was like, what am I going to do? What's next? What's happening? Where are we going from here? And it was almost like I had like a moment of clarity and sobriety in that like 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning where I wasn't just like stoned and like sleepy and like, it'll happen. I was like, oh, I got to get my shit into gear. I really got to get going again. And then that led to me getting like sad, which led to me and
girlfriend
having this conversation, which then led to me being like, oh, I don't really want to get high right now. And it made me feel like, okay, like, let me just put this on the back burners. I don't not want to, but I don't need to right now. And so that's very, very new as of like yesterday.
That's definitely fresh. It's also, you know, something you said to me a long time ago, like you were using weed to go to sleep. How you're describing it now is different. This definitely sounds like using weed to avoid thinking or feeling.
Yeah.
I mean, what you just described feeling is very real. And we've talked about allowing yourself to have the feelings as they come up and not run from it. Double down, not shut down. Let me move towards this. And sometimes like a little healthy avoidance is nice. But what you're describing and what you've been talking about the last few weeks of smoking a lot and a lot being uncertain, fresh being last night. Yeah. And these feelings have been there the whole time. We've just been putting them in a cloud of smoke.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
How was it actually feeling it and talking about it?
I think feeling it like by myself was really scary. And I was I was scared all the way up until the point to where she was like, hey, what's going on? Even then she was like, why aren't you talking to me? And I was like, I don't really know how. One of those classic, like, I don't really know where to start. And I think I actually said it too. I was like, I don't know where to start. I'm just going to say what I'm feeling. I just kind of like let out where I was at and that's where I was. And she was like, it's okay. You got this. We'll figure it out.
And for you, I don't know where to start. And then I did. That's the start.
Yeah.
But what used to trip you up is I don't know where to start, so I won't. I don't know how this is going to go, so I won't.
Hell yeah. Like, hell yeah.
There's something about this that's girlfriend. And there's something about this that is absolutely you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's more me in this situation, in the majority of our relationship, she really allows me to be vulnerable in my truest sense. And so it felt really good and really freeing to be able to be comfortable enough around somebody and not just my girlfriend, but as a friend. It felt really good as a friend that she was there.
Yeah. It's funny because you're talking about feeling comfortable enough to have uncomfortable feelings.
Well, and it was more comfortable just to say, no, I'm okay. No, it'll be fine. But right. That was my comfort zone. I'm good there. Like, I'm really good there. And I've actually found that I'm a lot better when I'm in the opposite of, no, I'm not okay. And being able to talk about that, the hardest part is starting. Now that I'm thinking about this and saying it, it's really fucking simple. But the hardest part was just me stopping her and being like, hey, I'm not okay. I'm just not okay today. And I could have started my day like that versus going through half of it and having like a weird, like something's wrong. I don't know what's going on. So that's something I noticed that I want to practice on. Hey, just to let you know, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed today.
Yeah. Cause there's a difference to me about feeling comfortable and feeling comforted. I don't know where to start. I'm feeling a little off. No, I'm not okay. Those are uncomfortable feelings, but the comfort comes from secondly, sharing it with her, primarily acknowledging it, like you're saying. I've seen the shift in you, and it goes right back to being more authentic and being vulnerable. You're somebody who actually is quite vulnerable and likes being vulnerable, and it feels more authentic. You also like to be somebody who holds it all together, takes care of everything, and everything's fine and okay, right?
That's great. So yesterday, in all of this, I think I literally said that I was like, I'm so vulnerable right now. I'm so emotional, but I'm trying to keep it all together and be strong. Something along the lines of like both of what you just said. And it's a dichotomy of like complete opposites.
Yeah. It's counterintuitive because we think that let me keep it all together and be strong. Okay. Look, if you're playing baseball and you tweak something, you're not going to tell anybody, you know? You're going to suck it up so you can keep playing. I mean, the irony is you might wind up hurting yourself even more, but life is not a baseball game. Wish it was sometimes, but it's not. And the reality is when you pull a muscle or something's off, the real strength comes in from, I think, acknowledging it and saying it. Being able to say, hey, I need support. Great, then you can actually get it. Going, no, I'm fine. Let me suck it up. I'll just get through it. I'll be good. I don't know. That might work in baseball sometimes. In life, sometimes that works too. Sometimes we need to put up the front and we need to just get through something. That's true.
Right.
But we're talking about having an emotional connection with somebody. And again, primarily it comes from you internally. Then it comes from the relationship. But you internally going, hey, I'm not okay right now. I don't feel good. That's not necessarily your default, but it's happening.
Right. I feel like that's my uncomfortable spot where I am comfortable.
I like that. Explain that.
Where I'm uncomfortably comfortable is where I'm starting the conversation as myself. I don't know where to start, but here I am. It's a thrill of the unknown almost. Like my uncomfortable is I don't know how they're going to perceive it, but I feel comfortable there because that's where I'm at my most vulnerable.
Yeah. And that's huge. It's less about I'm going into the unknown, this vast nothingness that I just don't understand, and more about I'm actually aware of I'm not repeating the thing that's familiar, the thing that I know, the thing that is comfortable. And I think you're experiencing it emotionally, you're experiencing it in terms of financially and what that looks like and the mental gymnastics you have around that too. As I say this, what's hitting you? What are you thinking?
I don't know why, but my head just went to my mom and the whole texting thing. I haven't been initiating it. And I found that she hits me up every once in a while. It's one of those things where it's like once in a blue moon. And that's cool with me if that's how it is. Like, okay.
What's that shrug? You're shrugging when you say that, when you went, it's okay. Like that was a big shrug, man.
I knew you were going to say that. So no, and it's where I want to be is I want her to hit me up every day and I want her to want to talk to me as her child. I want that connection with her as my mom. That I'm busy and she's busy and like maybe it's just not an everyday thing. And that's okay. Like, it's okay.
Yeah, dig into that. I want her to call me every day. I want that connection. Tell me about that.
I think by me saying I want her to, another way for me to say that is I'm afraid if she doesn't, something's going to go wrong.
That's some pressure.
Yeah, and I think I'm doing okay with it. I'm trying to deflect that pressure back to her and not take it on to myself because it's not my pressure to take. But I think I'm missing her more than I ever have.
Yeah. And I hear in this too, like not just the pressure, not just the missing her, but that's going back to feeling very scared.
Yeah.
Feeling very uncertain, feeling out of control. Something could happen to her. She could do something to herself. And that's sad and that's scary. And we're powerless. What you carry, we've talked about it before, is an obligation and a choice to stay connected with her, to stay hyper-vigilant about her well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had some moments, for sure, in the last maybe 6 months, where you've been able to detach from that and not take it on as it's ultimately your responsibility, because it's not. But you recognize that, you're still going to feel that pull, that fear, that worry. I want to honor those feelings if we can.
I don't think the way I feel about my mom necessarily will ever go away. I'm always going to have that fear, that scared, that what if something happens? But I think I'm getting better at how I deal with that feeling versus letting it completely like just overwhelm me and control me. I think I've done a lot better of like, yeah, I still feel that. Like, I'm so scared for my mom right now. No idea what she's doing or what's going on. But at the end of the day, I'm getting better at living my life and not living her life.
I like that. I don't think you're living her life, but I think there's an element where you still feel that obligation, maybe less choice now, to check in with her, to make sure she's okay, to be the good son, be perfect, any of that stuff.
Right.
And there's something in all this, like we're worried about losing her, about something could happen. But I think holding that's a very old place and a wounded place for you. And it started well before the OD, the first or second. You're nodding emphatically. Like, how do you know that that's true?
I mean, before the OD, I had that night in Canada with my brother. Even then, I was dealing with, okay, my brother's leaving, my mom's going to leave, my dad doesn't give a fuck. Where do I play in all of this? Maybe subconsciously, maybe consciously, I'm not sure. When my brother and I got in our first like initial like big fight, that kind of like changed stuff for us.
Right.
I think that was a moment for me where I made the choice of, I don't want to play a behind-the-scenes character. I want to be in this and try and fix it.
When you said maybe it's happening subconsciously, absolutely is.
Yeah.
There's stuff that happened to us from 0 to 3 years old that significantly impact us and impact the way we process, the way we think. And I don't know about you, but I don't remember very much from 0 to 3.
You know? Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there are things that just happen environmentally that isn't anybody's fault. We can blame mom, we can blame dad, but that doesn't do any good ultimately. And you don't really want to blame them. If we just look at it, it's the circumstance. And again, 0 to 3, we don't know much. But if, for example, some of your basic needs weren't getting met, some of the feeling love, feeling support, feeling like everything's okay, if that wasn't happening, then we missed that. And if on top of that, what might have been happening was somebody not being present. What we might know or recognize is that at that very early age and those early stages of developing how we think about the world, something was missing for me. Something wasn't okay.
I mean, I don't know if I'm just speculating here, but from 0 to 5, my dad was always working and my mom was running a fishing resort. So like they weren't really around.
I mean, that's huge because it's not like, oh yeah, that time that I was 4 years old and I fell into the water and almost drowned. Like it doesn't have to be that.
Yeah.
It can be seemingly as simple and harmless as, oh yeah, dad was just working and mom was not around. I mean, they just weren't around very much.
Right. And again, it's not their fault.
Not at all. Regardless of fault, your brain started to make sense of things a certain way, started to formulate things a certain way. Your emotions were developing and you're making sense of things. And we play that out in our adult life and we play it out often based on our patterns. And it is deeply subconscious in that level. When we can bring it to our consciousness and look at it and go, wait, why am I doing this? We can understand why if we look back and see how we were and what was going on. We can also go, wait a second, that's not accurate. That's not true. Let me check that out. And then we can move forward based on how we actually want to be.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about that. And I'm putting myself in my dad's shoes. And so he's out busy trying to build a business, do his thing, all that shit. Meanwhile, me being a kid, not understanding why dad's not home, it's such a weird life thing because he's out there trying to give me my best life. But then I'm sitting there crying because he's not there, not understanding why. But then it takes me 20 years fast forward to be like, oh yeah, it's because he wanted me to have a better life. It's just one of those weird things. And I don't know if that still affects my subconscious, even though I understand why he was doing what he was doing.
Yeah, that's great insight. I mean, the easy answer, and you know I'm going to give you a hell of a lot more than the easy answer, is yes, of course that affects you.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, what you're talking about is his intention was good.
Right.
Noble. He had noble intent. He was working to give you a better life. Okay, cool. What my experience of that was is that my daddy's not around.
Hmm.
It explains it. It doesn't necessarily excuse it or erase it. It still happened. I grew up at a very early age without dad around.
I think a lot of my relationships too, I look for intent and not my experience. And so I also think I get wrapped up in seeing what people wanted to happen and looking at whatever situation might be for that versus, oh, this is what really happened.
It's still there and it had an impact. And, not but, and it affected me this way.
Right.
Because for you, what we're seeing and what we're talking about is you do often see people's intentions. You go, oh, if they had noble intent, then it's okay.
But is it?
I don't think so. Do you think so?
I don't know yet.
Well, and I think that's great. I don't know yet. You have to experience it. You have to experience both sides of it.
I think I have trouble more in the gray where it's like, that could be borderline, like not okay, but okay. I think that's where I get lost because I want to see the good in people and I want to see everybody for their best intentions versus allowing myself to see what they are or action-wise for what it really is.
Is it black or white? Is it binary that way?
No. And I think I can see black and white very clearly. I think that's the easy part for me. I think it's the gray where I'm like, I don't know what that means.
It's the black and white and plaid, seeing the plaid. It's seeing that they're both there. Red car, white car, every color of the rainbow car.
Right.
It's all out there. The best of intentions and a little fucked up.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be one or the other. When we do that one or the other, we're like, I'm never going to have anything to do with him. He treated me like this or she did, you know, I'm out. You've done that I'm out thing before.
Oh, yeah. I'm good at that.
Plenty. Right. You've also done the, oh, yeah, that's cool. No problem. Yeah, no, I understand. Yep. And if we look at that as a spectrum, not a one or the other, but a little bit of both, and understanding that there might be good intentions and I might react to it a certain way. I might have certain feelings about that. In the case of your dad not being around at an early age, I understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And the impact was my daddy wasn't around. That affected me. It doesn't have to be his fault. It's just the circumstance and what happened. I'm thinking about some things back with
old girlfriend
that she would do that were a little sus.
Super sus.
And you were trying hard to see the good in her, to see, like you said, she did enough of the little things.
Yeah.
And the little moments. She put her hand on my back at the table at Vegas. Awesome. So she can fucking pop pills, get drunk, be all kinds of crazy and do whatever she wants and be a kid. And you were justifying it the whole time. Like, well, she's young. She just wants to have fun. It's cool.
God, yeah. Like when I'm seeing it and hearing it like that, like that's so dumb. Like it's just like DJ Khaled, congratulations, you played yourself. You know, because right. It's like right. how in any world is a pat on the back okay to go get fucked up and pills and everything I'm against? It's in a irrational response to what's going on and the opposite spectrum of, oh, everything's so bad. That's me saying, oh, everything's so good right now when like really it's not.
Right. And it's recognizing that, oh, it doesn't have to be one or the other. It could be a little bit of both. I don't have to have this strong reaction. A hand on my back doesn't make all this stuff go away.
Right.
There's something that we're actually guarding against in that. There's a reason why that hand on your back made it okay.
My initial thought was just, it has to go with the abandonment issue thing. Like that little pat on my back is enough for me to not be abandoned. So then it's like, okay, hall pass, do whatever you want.
Absolutely. Because it's the abandonment that comes up. It's that fear that we were talking about a little while ago. Whether it's fear of the unknown or what's uncertain, fear of being alone, fear of something bad might happen if I'm not there, whatever that is, that abandonment and that fear is huge.
Yeah, massive. It's probably my heaviest brick.
Yeah. I say it to you every 6 weeks that you've had one of the worst experiences of that. Your mom ODing twice. And then every time she was messed up, your cousin, your friend, you've had a lot of these experiences of people abandoning you, for lack of a better word, feeling abandoned because they were gone or they chose to be gone or some circumstance, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So any experience that gives us a hint of that is going to carry not just that brick, but that whole fucking bag of bricks. Could be a feather, but if that feather fits that, it's going to bring you to that whole bag.
Yeah.
So we need to kind of look at that piece of abandonment, that piece of not okay, right? And what that is for you, it's not a function of mom's going to leave, dad's going to leave. Those are the variables. The constant is how I feel.
Yeah. And it's crazy you bring that up because that's how I've been feeling the last couple of days too. And I think I'm living for the now, not the, I need this forever.
I love that because there's a reality here, which is nothing is forever.
Right.
When we acknowledge that and can accept that, we don't have to like it, but when we accept it, then we can actually move to be present in the moments and even uncomfortable moments. The abandonment that got triggered, that you went to that place, and that abandonment is we're grasping for something, we're reaching for something. Where's that hand on my back? Where's that guarantee that you're not going to OD? How can I be okay here? And that's the real crux of it. Because if we can figure out how I can be okay, how I can feel whole,
yeah,
or even okay not being whole. I mean, you said it, okay to be not okay.
Yeah, I love that.
And it's those moments will absolutely hit that. So it's in those moments kind of going, okay, yeah, this is scary. And I feel alone. I feel like somebody bailed on me. And before we shut down, we just go, wow, yeah, I think this is bringing up more than, this is not just one feather. It's not just one brick. It's a whole fucking ton. Man, what's going on here? There's something here. But I would not be surprised if you had a night terror soon.
I know. And I think I kind of had one the other day, but I don't really remember it. I woke up all anxious and fucking scared. So I was like, what the fuck was that? But yeah, I can feel that coming too.
Yeah. And maybe it won't because we're talking about it. But the environment and the setup is there in that the abandonment is I'm being financially abandoned, which is not accurate, but that's the sensation that you'll get. And it will trigger that place and our brains will make sense of it that way. And it will feel uncomfortable. So we'll reach for what's comfortable.
And hopefully that comfortable becomes uncomfortable. Hopefully I flip that. That's what I want to do.
Yeah. And that comes from, again, your favorite thing, vulnerability. The talk that you had with girlfriend was huge.
For me, that was the first time I've ever... I remember that night there I had when we first started dating and I came out and she's let me do my thing. Yeah. And that was that. That felt good, but this felt even better because she really allowed me and she met me where I was. She was in the sixth gear coming up all high, like, what's up? Why are you acting like this? And then she instantly was like, oh, let me go to reverse. This, she really allowed me just to be and express where I was and be vulnerable and met me where I was. It was almost better that she met me as a friend and not a, oh, well, I love you, so it's going to be okay. It was, oh, no, yeah, this shit sucks.
It didn't trigger in you, oh, because in a loving relationship with my partner, I have to front like this. I have to guard like it was as my friend. Oh, I can just relax.
Yeah.
Oh, I can just say this and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be a certain way. I can just be myself.
Yeah.
And that's, I see the smile there. What's that?
I mean, it's gratitude more than anything. I think I'm really happy to be able to look back a year and a half ago where I was and when I first walked in and kind of our first meeting. So I'm very grateful just to be able to know, to look back on a situation like that and be like, yeah, we have put the work in and that's fucking awesome. On another level, I think I'm really happy that I'm not afraid anymore to be uncomfortable. I think that was a huge thing for me. And I feel like I had to front for a lot of things. So I'm very grateful that I'm getting to a point in my life where I'm happy with who I am and not who I think I should be.
I love that for you. All right. I can be uncomfortable and I can get comfort. Eventually, comforting becomes comfortable and spin it this way for a second. I want to claim my independence from my parents and take care of myself. You've said that to me, but then they want to pull finances. Oh, fuck. I'm being abandoned, so to speak, as opposed to me being independent.
Right.
So we're finding that balance because the reality is it really is you being yourself, growing, being your own person, being how you want to be in the world.
I really like that abandonment versus independence. That's huge. So I can either choose to feel abandoned or I can choose to be like, oh, no, I got this. I'm independent. It's the same thing. It's just different perspectives.
Feeling that independence is going to be more empowering, it might also be scary. Look, the abandonment is a wound and we'll tend to that and we will heal that. The independence is amazing. What a gift. And we are back.
We sure are. So I liked how you talked about being like internally excited as opposed to like the external validation.
Right, right.
And one of the things you first jumped into was rock star attire. And I have so many thoughts about this because living in LA my whole life, like it's not fancy and it's not. So you can go to the nicest restaurant and get away with jeans.
Oh, yeah.
It's all about the attitude you have when you walk in. So was he saying he was excited because he was moving, but was the whole thing about even though he was moving back to a place that he lived before, he can still do it with confidence?
Yeah. What was really cool and what we were kind of hitting that was probably unclear because we didn't want to give too much about actually him away, that he was moving back to a place where he first was when he came to LA that was really comfortable for him. And he's familiar with it. It's comfortable. He's stoked about being there. But there's some, I don't know if I'd call it stigma attached to it, but it's not a very hip place to live.
Right.
If people heard where he lived, they'd kind of be like, oh, really? But because he was owning it, he was more comfortable with himself internally being there, like him being stoked. It was like, I'm not just stoked because I've got like this amazing place to live in Malibu on the beach and this, that.
Right.
No, I'm stoked because I feel like it fits me and my comfort and the familiarity that I want more. So he can own it and tell people about it without any issue.
That's awesome. Okay. So one of the things is, and this is not a judgment, but this is a question/clarification. So Drew talked about that he said he's been smoking a lot, not just a lot, right. a lot. And then he talks about not being able to sleep one night. And he said, I wished I could smoke a joint or whatever. And I was wondering why he couldn't, or if he was just choosing not to. But then he talked about a moment of clarity and sobriety, which I liked, about him needing to get his shit together. And I was kind of thinking like, haven't we heard this before? And again, he's 25 and doing amazing and has come so far.
Mm-hmm.
So the smoking weed thing, he stops, he starts, he wants to smoke less, get his shit together. And I kind of just wanted to put it out there that if that is the case, because people are listening to this podcast, myself included, thinking, who the fuck is this kid? He's amazing. Everything's on this perfect upward trajectory. Mm-hmm. And this kind of was like, oh, wait, he is human. And there are ups and downs. And it just occurred to me, not like, Drew, get your shit together. You keep saying it, but it was like, okay, yeah. So he's having ups and downs too.
Yeah. And it's, for me as his therapist, I've always heard him using weed is it's sometimes to go to bed. Sometimes it's a certain level of comfort for him. And sometimes it is avoidance. And it's when it's avoidance is when I really dig into it.
Right.
And I've never really taken a direct tact with, you need to smoke less. That's not for me.
No.
Right. That's a judgment. And I don't take that tact. I don't find it useful either.
Yeah. So what you jumped into was feeling comfortable enough to have these uncomfortable feelings and that he used to be comfortable saying like, oh yeah, I'm okay. No worries. And that now, like, I guess he had that conversation with his girlfriend about money. He did say he was down and sad and he didn't know why.
Right.
Right. And then his girlfriend, they talked about it and she's like, it's all good. Don't worry. We'll figure it out. And I guess what he said was he wished he had started that day more authentically so that he didn't go through all that and then finally tell her it's about that. So I think he was saying like, yes, I'm definitely moving towards being comfortable enough to be uncomfortable. And I want to work on that more. And then you guys talked about, which I noted, I loved, comfortable versus comforted.
Yeah, we've hit that a few times. And for him, his kind of go-to is when he feels uncomfortable, he's going to go, which most of us do, to something that soothes. So what soothes? And for him, it's weed or it's clinging to somebody, whether it's parents or a relationship. And him realizing he can move towards the uncomfortable things, you know, the double down, don't shut down.
Right.
What I thought was really cool was that he started telling me all this with like saying, I think he said, I told her I woke up on the wrong side of the bed.
Yeah.
So he just kind of had this feeling that he was a little off and he didn't know what it was. And when he woke up at like 3-4 in the morning, whatever it was, he didn't want to just get stoned and fall back asleep. It was like, well, what's going on? And like you said, that led to him having the conversation with her and really just being like, yeah, I just don't feel great. And being able to say that, even him saying, I wish I'd started the day that way. Like, okay, but you got to that point in the
day.
Like you got there. And saying, I wish I'd done it earlier. I didn't hear him beating himself up. I heard him saying, wow, this felt so good to do this. Now I know I can.
Yeah. And I think, so one of the differences I just want to know. So he talked about feeling comfortable enough to have uncomfortable feelings, which I love.
Great line. Yeah.
One of the things that I talk about with my clients is being comfortable in their uncomfortability, right? So it's kind of like, I'm used to being stuck in this fucking chaotic life that I have. And so I'm just going to stay in it, as opposed to what Drew was saying sounded like he was comfortable enough to have these and be able to have and feel these authentic, uncomfortable feelings and even share them. So it's different.
Yeah. Well, and you just hit a key, like being able to share them. What he's, I didn't say it to him in the session, but what he was describing was when it's just me alone, it's too scary. I don't like to go there. And he has been in relationships where he hasn't felt like he could go there with them. It wasn't very supportive. He has one consistent relationship now where he can go there. That's the relationship he has with this therapist. And he's experiencing what it's like for him to go to these uncomfortable places and have it go well. So it makes him more inclined to try it with somebody in his life, like he's doing and experimenting with her.
Right.
I really like that he's seeing this in himself. That's the strength in himself and the comfort in himself to be uncomfortable. It's okay.
Yeah. And he talked about how being vulnerable feels more authentic and he feels better taking care of other people and keeping it together. And he said, yeah, it's a dichotomy of complete opposites. And I was like, yes, dialectics, my friend.
Right.
Little grasshopper, you are growing.
It's funny because I brought it back to an analogy of something that he knows very well because he played baseball. So I brought it to baseball. Anybody that's played sports and in many other things, doesn't have to be sports, it can be dance or whatever it is, something physical. If you get hurt, you often don't reveal that you got hurt because you're supposed to play through the pain.
Right.
If you admit that you're hurt, you might play less or you might get pulled and you don't want to. You just don't tell anybody about it and you suck it right up and you keep going. And the irony that I said in the session, the irony is you might wind up hurting yourself even more or hurting right a team by playing hurt.
Right.
I think a line that you liked because you mentioned it to me earlier, right? When I said, life is not a baseball game.
Yeah.
You don't have to just play through the pain and be hurt.
And I just want to differentiate that between something. So, because then you said something like, sometimes we need to put up a front and just get through it.
Right.
Yes. And sometimes it's not putting up a front, right? So like as therapists, I mean, this happens naturally for me because I get so engaged with my clients, but there are times where, okay, let's say I had a huge fight with my sister and right before a session starts. So it's right not that I'm putting up a front. I'm taking that issue. I'm putting it in a box. I'm putting it on the shelf. I'm right not shoving the emotions down.
Right.
I'm doing what's effective. I'm going to take it back off the shelf later at some point.
Yeah. And that's something that Drew and I've talked about quite a bit, especially because he stumbled on this word and now he uses the word and can say it very well, compartmentalize.
Right.
It's a great tool to compartmentalize something yeah as long as later you open up the compartment to mentalize it, look at it, think about it, work through it. And certainly I think in the context of what Drew's talking about, what you're talking about, yeah, you don't necessarily have to put on a front. Sometimes you do, because if you are completely open and vulnerable and honest and just say, yeah, I'm having a really hard day. I'm going to work it out with my therapist later. So let's just keep going with whatever we're doing. Whoever you say that to, that might throw them off, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't really work. Nobody talks like that. But if you have that as your inner dialogue in your head.
Sure.
And go,
right,
okay, this is going on. I'm going to compartmentalize it, stick it over there, open it up in therapy or with a friend or whenever I do, and I can keep going with whatever I'm doing and be fine.
Right.
That's fine. Sometimes we do that. And what I was saying about the real strength in getting support is coming from recognizing when, if you were playing baseball and you were hurt, you couldn't play, like saying, hey, I'm less than, you know, 100% right now. Let's right have somebody else step in. Telling somebody that you're less than is really hard to do, but it's super strong and people will surprise you with how much they will come around to support you, I think, and I hope.
Well, right, exactly. And so he continued or took the leap of not initiating text with his mom.
Right.
And he said that she's been texting him sometimes and it's okay that it's not an everyday thing, even though he wants it to be an everyday thing because he's afraid that if she doesn't, something might go wrong.
Right.
And then he said he's missing her more than he ever has. And I thought, wow, that's got to actually be a nice feeling. And that's something I think is often true and we forget about because technology is so instantaneous these days.
Right.
And I wrote down, yeah, this is choice versus obligation. And the next thing you said is, this is choice versus obligation. I was like, good on you, Mayor.
Right. It's really interesting how he was walking through this to me. And something that I heard in listening back to this episode was there was such a great moment in here too, where I know we're getting at something. We're talking about his attachment with mom. We're talking about abandonment. And what we're talking about, you and I, about staying connected and that constant texting or staying in touch. What is it about needing that attachment? It's that fear of abandonment, fear that something will go wrong if I'm not around. So
right
in the session, when he said to me, yeah, I'm not texting her and it's cool. Like she'll talk to me like once in a blue moon, whatever. And I saw him shrug and I went, wait, hang on. You're shrugging. What's that? Cause he's saying something, but his body yeah was doing something, showing me that he doesn't believe what he's saying. And he, even as I said that and pointed it out, he goes, yeah, all right. I knew you'd see that. All right. Well,
totally.
And that's what really led him to the point of saying, I miss my mom. I miss my mom and dad.
Yep.
It was bringing up some of the, as I said, the issues of attachment and abandonment and looking at some of that. And what's really cool for me hearing it in the episode is he's recognizing how hypervigilant he's been about staying connected and not letting anything happen. And
right.
And that's the dichotomy and the dialectic that you love of holding both things. I want to be an individual and grow and move away from my parents. And I miss my parents and I'm scared that something will happen. I have both of those things are true.
Totally. And you guys talked about the sort of 0 to 3 years old thing and in your environment and what impacts you. And I liked how Drew was like, okay, answer me this.
Oh, loved that. Right.
When I was little and dad worked a lot and he wasn't around, I was crying because he wasn't around. But now right. 20 years later, I realized he had to work and it took me that long to understand it. And does it affect me? And you're like, simple answer, which is not going to be simple. Yes. And right. then talking about intention, and I do give a lot of, I don't know if it's leeway or when I think about someone's intention, and this is right. what you guys talked about, and he brought this up, like, oh, I think a lot of my relationships are focused on the intention and not the experience of what really happened.
Right.
And yes, total dialectic. Their intention is good. And they treated you like shit. It's not okay. And it's that radical acceptance piece, right? Like, yeah. okay, it's okay to look at both. And when we're just taking crumbs from somebody, and he laughed and he was like, how the fuck did I think it was okay that like I got a pat on the back from my ex and then
right.
I got right. to justified her just being basically a wreck and treating him like shit. Sometimes we take crumbs and hopefully we learn from that and learn that we deserve and want more.
It's so interesting to hear him making all these links and yep. he's linking like, oh, the abandonment issue with mom is the big one. And he's feeling it like, oh, I don't want to abandon her. And mm-hmm. then he brings up dad. And it's kind of like, wait, I got a question.
Yeah.
What about dad not being around? Did that affect me? You know, which is great because he's looking at that was a different type of abandonment that he felt. And he's processing this. And then he's looking at people that will in his life that will do the little things and he'll overlook the big things or
yeah.
make a leap and draw a conclusion about their intention based on a little thing that they do.
Exactly.
And this is another thing I love about being in therapy with somebody for a while and seeing them through different relationships. We referred to an ex-girlfriend, not the one from his hometown, but the one that he had here, the one that put his
yeah.
her hand on him in Vegas. And as he and I are walking through it in the context of talking about these attachment issues, talking about abandonment issues, he's drawing the link. And he had this wonderful moment where he's like, oh man, now that I'm hearing it back. and I love how he pulled it out. He's like I'm feeling like DJ Khaled, like,
yeah.
congratulations, you played yourself.
Yeah, that was so good.
Like, and he said it in a light way. Like there are people that will have that feeling and then they will feel guilty, ashamed, embarrassed, and they will beat themselves up.
Yeah.
And we have to have that compassion for ourselves and recognize that we're learning. And it's deeper than that. It wasn't just like, oh, this ex-girlfriend played you. Yeah, you should have known better. No, it goes all the way back to mom and to dad and to 0 to 3 years old when we didn't even remember what was going on consciously.
Right. Totally. Another analogy or metaphor, I don't know, that you guys talked about is the brick thing, right?
No, the feathers and bricks. Yeah.
Yeah. And you said something about, you were him, but you said something about like, what's your heaviest brick or something about your heaviest brick. And I was like, what's my heaviest brick?
Yeah, it's, well, in the session, it was looking at, I mean, we were directly then talking about abandonment and the fear of being alone for fear of something bad happening.
Right.
If he's not there, he was like, oh yeah, that's my heaviest brick.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, we carry that with ourselves. Don't even realize, like we've talked about the ton of feathers or ton of bricks, like what weighs more,
right.
Tons a ton. And we just carry this stuff and we keep it in our bag and we can empty it out every now and then. Some of these things just sit at the bottom of the bag and don't really get emptied until we get to pull it out in moments like this and subsequent moments where we'll talk about, oh, this is your heaviest brick. Can we pull it out of the bag and talk about it and look at it? Can we break it down into like rocks so it's not just a brick?
I think maybe you can start using your dirty clothes as this example. Can you pull it out of the laundry?
No, there's roaches down there. I don't want to go there. No way. Gross. Ooh,
so deep. And then I think you guys talked about, an abandonment. And then you talked about, are you being financially abandoned, which is a big thing. No, he's not. And it may feel like it, or sure, is that part of it? But no, not in reality. And you guys talked about one of the things at the end that I really loved is how independence is a gift. And I think we talked about that last time. And I was saying that becoming financially independent from my parents was the most amazing thing that's ever happened. Mm. And independence in whatever way is such a gift. And I think there's a difference between independence and having to be independent because someone leaves you.
It's not being abandoned. It's choice versus obligation again. It's being alone by choice. Maybe you're not choosing to reach out or choosing your support, but it's there and it's okay. It's new and it's different, and something that he's been walking through so much the last few weeks, which is really cool, is a lot of unknown territory. Couple this with he's moving back to an area that he used to live in. Right. So there's something familiar about that, but it's unknown to a degree of like going into it this way. But he's internally starting to really shift and starting to be different in this. It is anxiety producing, and that's okay because we get through it. And I even said to him towards the end of the session, I wouldn't be surprised if he had a night terror soon.
I know. I thought to myself, did you just fucking plant that in his head, Doug? And then he was like, no, I think I just had one.
Well, and I wanted to normalize it because I could see for him like, wow, there's a tremendous amount of anxiety, normalizing it for him that because of everything that's coming up and you're processing it, your system is going to kind of go, wait, what is this?
Right.
That's what we're working through now actively. It's pretty cool.
It is really cool.
I think all of it is really finding a way for him to be comfortable, feeling uncomfortable, and at the core, comfortable being yourself.
Right.
A true self, authentic self, and being able to say like, I woke up on the wrong side of the bed. I'm just having a bad day.
Yep.
I'm okay with that. And he even said earlier in the session, I think it's not I'm not okay and that's okay. He's like, I'm not okay. And that's, it's not okay. I'm just not doing okay today.
Right.
He is okay with that, which is pretty great. Similar to when he said, I love that 10% disappointment. It's recognizing, maybe there's 10% uncomfortable and that's okay. I can be okay with that now.
Yep.
It really does make me very proud of the work that we're doing, of the work that you and I do as therapists, of the work that clients do when they really want to change and they're really looking at some of their issues. It's phenomenal. And I hope that you guys out there are really hearing this stuff. And I'm aware that it's a show to you and it's to a degree entertaining, but hopefully it's helping you guys and helping you guys grow, because that's really what it's all about.
Amen. Stick around. We got more coming up next week.
We do indeed. You will hear some further growth and tell us about your growth. Find us on all the social media places. If you haven't already, please write a review for us. That helps us out too. I never say that, but it does help us out a whole lot. If you write a review, love us, hate us, don't care about us.
It can be anything.
Sure. You can tell us about your underwater basket weaving class. And that would be fine.
That'd be so cool if somebody actually did that.
Cool. And we will talk to you next week. Bye.